So, we're doing a radio show today, or a program for podcast. And what topics do you think we should cover? There's a lot of things to choose from out there. But what kind of topics are you leaning toward? Anything in particular?
Ooh, pretty much anything.
Well, obviously there's the Sandra Bland story in the news. The death of Sandra Bland in police custody is nothing new. It's something that we're seeing happening all across the country. This has been going on for, in fact, for a very long time. I don't know if you saw this, but there was a meme going around on social media that had a quote from Assata Shakur from the 70s talking about how it was common to find black people that had been hanged or burned in their cells, and that this frequently happened to people that were in prison that were problems to the guards, problems to the police. And so it was a common, especially for prisoners, to see other prisoners' lives snuffed out under mysterious circumstances. And there was no one to question, and there has been no one to question these types of deaths. But they've been going on for a very long time.
Well, they've been well documented in the past, and the problem now is that, you know, who is in charge of actually exposing this? It's not the police department. It's not the government. It's not the Texas Rangers. It's people on social media who have been really driving the information to come out to people to know what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is hard for people to swallow, I think, is the idea that the media itself is complicit with police, authorities, government in selling propaganda, the narrative they want to tell us as fact, when in reality we have a long documented history of police violence and state violence against people of color. I mean, it's not that long ago that the civil rights movement was happening. 1968 was only 2 years before I was born. You were already alive.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of people that lived through that. You know, Congressman John Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
These are folks that can remember being the victims of police violence, racial violence. John Lewis spoke about the Bloody Sunday massacre and attack of police violence against people of color that were marching. John Lewis was there. He still bears the scars on his head from that contact with police, from that attack on people of color by the police. And he remembers that they were wearing Confederate flags on their helmets.
Wow.
He remembers these symbols of hate. He felt a huge relief when they finally removed the Confederate flag, when they lowered the Confederate flag in South Carolina and other states that this has been occurring. But the fact that we have been able to agree that the Confederate flag is no longer a symbol with which we want Americans to be associated in 2015 is undermined by the reality that it took a massacre of 9 people in a church for that to happen.
Yeah.
That's the sad part to me, because it seems as if it shouldn't require a blood sacrifice of that many black people for white people to accept, to acknowledge that a symbol of treason and racism and support of slavery should stop being a symbol of America 150 years later, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Civil War is over now, But people are still trying to defend it, and they continue to sell us this idea that it's heritage, that it's history. Yeah, I guess I would agree with that on some level. It is heritage and history of slavery and of racism in this country, of apartheid, of segregation, of police violence, of state violence. So, you know, the Sandra Bland story, there's a couple of things that I wanted to talk about with regard to that. I mean, mm-hmm. people are talking about the video being doctored. People are talking about whether or not Sandra Bland had the right to defend herself against the police officers' unlawful orders, whether she should have been more respectful of the policeman's authority. And what I really want people to think about is how many of these dead bodies are showing up in jails now? And why is the murder of black people being moved inside? Because that's what it seems like to me. It seems like we're taking too many risks as the state is, you know, constantly profiling people of color, attacking peaceful protesters that are fighting for Black Lives Matter and people of color lives matter movements and protests across this country. And you have the state coming out and violently repressing these peaceful marches and protests in many cases. I think that there is a message in all of this. The fact that people have started to become wise to police violence, that they have become aware that civil asset forfeiture is just a form of highway robbery that's sanctioned by our government, that police frisking and stopping hundreds of thousands of black and Latino people in New York is a form of extension of slave patrols and Jim Crow. These things are differently named, repackaged forms of the same type of violence against people of color and control of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
That has always existed. We just put it in a new package, called it a new name. We called it the war on drugs, and we put 2 million people in prison in America.
Yeah.
Over 2 million people in prison. So, we need to start questioning why these murders, these deaths, these unexplained deaths are occurring in prison. If you will recall, it was not that long ago that we gained social media, we gained the internet. It's really only been in our lifetime. In the last 10, 20 years, social media and the internet have acquired a place in changing how people communicate news, how people hear about news, and what is deemed important in the news. It no longer matters that NBC, CBS, and ABC have a nightly news show that we all tune into, or that we all are watching Fox News or CNBC. It doesn't matter.
No.
Because YouTube, because Instagram, because Twitter and Facebook have made it possible for people to tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even have to be something that the national media wants to discuss. People can make a news story viral on the internet, whether or not the news media is interested in sharing those stories.
And people in the community have become accustomed to actually getting real news from social networking, they call it. But there's a lot of people who still rely on the news that's put on the networks. Is that is the truth? But there's been so many things that have been on the news and the networks that really it doesn't make any sense to trust that. But people somehow have given that power over to the media that they're actually telling the truth.
I think that what's happened is that there is definitely a social and cultural change occurring. Because when we were young, I remember we had landlines. Remember landlines?
Oh, yeah. Even before that, party lines.
Party lines, landlines. People had phones. They were tethered to a wall. I remember hopping on the phone, talking to my BFF on the phone for hours and hours.
Mm-hmm.
These were things that connected us to other people. And now the way in which we communicate is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than spending 3 hours on the phone with my BFF or my two BFFs on a two-way call, I can jump on Facebook and talk to 1,000 of my BFFs.
Yeah.
I can communicate and share information in massive quantities. On Twitter, I can talk to millions of people at once.
Mm-hmm.
I can communicate through hashtags. I can communicate through videos or vines or memes. And that is something that, you know, for a generation ago, is a little strange.
Yep.
They don't know what's a vine, what's a meme. You know, my dad is on Facebook. Your dad just got on Facebook recently.
Mm-hmm.
It takes folks a while to get used to the new forms of technology.
Mm-hmm.
But for the majority of people, 40, 45 years of age, 50 years of age or younger, social media has now become a valid source of information. Social media has now become a way of finding out what the real news is, even before the news is telling us the news. In fact, most of the time, anything I see on a nightly news show, I already knew about 3 or 4 days ago from social media, from Twitter, from Tumblr, from Pinterest, from some other Facebook something. It wasn't the news. The news shouldn't even be called the news anymore. It should be called the old because it's
the old. Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing is that folks can now take a story about what happened in a local police encounter and turn it into a viral video seen the country over and the world over by using social media.
Yeah.
And that is an incredible power to be able to communicate with people across a platform that big without barriers, you know, from media and without them taking over the message, hijacking the message of the person that's sharing the story.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen an unprecedented numbers of videos depicting police violence, showing the length that police and authorities are willing to go to not only to command the respect of people of color, but to brutalize them, to beat them, to kill them unarmed, in public, on public property, in establishments like Walmart and other public facilities, and with their hands up, facing away from officers, running away from officers, doing nothing, absolutely nothing, being asleep in some cases. And this, all of this has prompted people to begin to talk about police violence.
Yes.
And militarization of the police. Whether or not they're white folks who the majority feel, you know, cops are doing a great job, or people of color, the majority of whom fear the police because of the long history that we've had of being brutalized and killed by police.
And people of color know that history and white people don't. We've been put asleep when it comes to the propaganda being put out by the media that just basically kowtows to the police departments. We don't have a sense of history. These things have been going on. It's not like these just happened recently and this is a basically an increase in police brutality has been going on for a long time. They're just actually getting caught on tape. They're getting caught by witnesses, and they're able to communicate what they see and tell the stories immediately to millions of people. And you don't have to wait for NBC to put it on their newscast, because they're not going to. So there's a bunch of people who really just, they're shocked that this is happening. And the thing is, it's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question, okay? Let me ask you, why do you think, because these videos have been everywhere. You can't go a day without watching or hearing of another dead black or brown person, unarmed, children, women, pregnant, people dying in police custody left and right. So why is there such a huge difference between what white people believe is happening and what people of color believe is happening at the hands of police? Because we're both watching the same videos. Mm-hmm. We're both hearing the same news. So what's the difference?
Well, racism is the difference. It's also the worldview of white people compared to people of color. The stats we've looked at.
But the videos are the same.
Yes.
It's like if I hold up a red card, unless you're colorblind, I expect us both to see the color red.
Yeah.
So the question I'm asking you is, how can people, white people, watching the same exact news feed, a loop, a parade of dead people at the hands of police, and there's still no call for justice, no de-escalation of violence against people of color, nothing. It's like, boop, like flatline.
Yeah.
What causes outrage in the white community? What causes outrage in the white community? I'll tell you, one of the things that has caused outrage, almost like a knee-jerk reaction, when they took that down, that Confederate flag, white people, even progressive white folks, oh, well, there's no need for that. We still need to have history. I mean, even in the discussion of some of this racist paraphernalia, because that's what I call it. I call it racist paraphernalia. These murals of Indian lynchings, these flags with pioneers killing Indians, these murals in state houses of the Ku Klux Klan riding on horseback. This racist paraphernalia that celebrates the lynching of black and brown bodies at the hands of white supremacy. The discussion of removing these things, or the actual removal of them, seems to make white people, even well-meaning, liberal, good white people, lose their ever-loving minds. The good ones, as I call them, will tell you, well, we have to keep this stuff somewhere. Why? Why do we have to keep it? Because we don't keep the history of the lynchings in our heads or anywhere. We don't celebrate the remembrance of that, the sacrifice, the blood sacrifice of thousands, of hundreds of thousands, of millions of bodies, and the genocide that was the creation of this country, the slavery of black people, the genocide of indigenous cultures. We don't put that everywhere. We're taking that information out of the textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
We're erasing it from history. We're making sure that nobody knows that all of this land used to be native land. Right? That in order for people to go out to the lakes every summer and enjoy that whole area, a bunch of native people had to be murdered. Yeah. We don't talk about that.
No.
Because that makes us feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But we want to hold on to that mural of the KKK. We got to hold on to that Confederate flag. We got to keep it somewhere. Take it down gently. Take it down very gently.
With respect.
Let's all get down on our knees and praise the paraphernalia of racism. That seems to move white America. Those topics seem to move white America. But you got to have a parade a literal parade of gore, of death, to make white people moved enough to take down a symbol of hate. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's not like they're going to start changing the laws that keep black people and brown people oppressed, that keep us in prison, that keep sending us there disproportionately, that stops police from having the impunity to murder us when and where they want. No. We're not going to change any of that. That can remain the same. But let's take down the flag and we'll debate the other stuff.
Yeah. And take time. Long time.
Yeah.
Well, it comes back to, you know, statistically, how often do white people actually have a real encounter with a person of color? And mm-hmm. it's huge numbers. It's way up in the 75% of white people don't even have a person of color that's a friend.
But don't you find it interesting? Because you've been with me for 5 years and we've been in a mm-hmm. relationship where we frequently confront people on their racism.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because you've seen me do it when I call people out on their racism or when we've done that to someone. Don't you find it interesting? They always have that black friend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a qualifier. It's a way to kind of erase the uncomfortability and to give them some sort of in that, hey, I'm not racist. I'm not one of those people. White people have a huge drive to be good white people.
I think there's something else there, too, though. Because let me just say, I don't tell white people what I really think of them all the time. Why would I? They don't listen.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear the truth. The minute I start telling them how I really feel, they lose it. They become defensive. They get angry. They need to white-splain away what my feelings are and tell me how I should really be feeling. Oh, no. You don't want to pull the race card right now, Cindy. That would be wrong. You don't know what real discrimination is like. This isn't it. Don't you have something better to do than to focus on this? I mean, there are puppies that are being they're going unspayed and unneutered. White people love them some animals saving. Oh, yeah. They will mm-hmm. they will save a whale. They will save an animal or a whale before they will save a black person.
Oh yeah.
But it is this idea that if black and brown folks treat you with respect, those that you work with, those that you see at the grocery store bagging up your purchase, the ones that are taking care of you at the checkout line, the ones that serve you at McDonald's, the people that are taking care of your kids at the daycare, right?
Right.
Those people all treat you with respect. They smile at you. They talk to you politely. What did you expect? If we're not polite with white people, we can end up dead.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not we like you. And believe me, many times we have to bite our tongues. We have to hold in what we're really feeling and thinking. Because we know if we make you angry, if we rub you the wrong way, the consequences can be very great. And white people can be very petty, very angry. One of the favorite things white people love to tell us when push comes to shove in a situation where they're dealing with a person of color and they don't like how that person of color is talking to them is, I'm going to call the cops. You want me to call the cops? Because I can call the cops. And guess who they're going to believe?
The white people.
And I know what that means. I know what that means. That means I can end your life. Your life as a person of color has no meaning. My life is more valuable because I have white superiority. You want me to prove it? You want me to prove to you how powerful I am? All I got to do is call the authorities. All I got to do is call the lynch mob. And they will come a-running. And for the most part, they're right.
Mm-hmm.
So white people, just because we smile at you and tell you you are our best friend, we love you. Just because we let you say racist things in front of you and don't jump down your throat doesn't mean we don't think that you're racist. It doesn't mean we don't think you're ableist or homophobic. It doesn't mean we don't think you're sexist when we don't say something to you as women. It means that you're our boss and we can't say nothing. It means that you are in a place of authority in this society. And you know what? I don't have time to waste trying to talk to a white person and telling them how I really feel when I know they don't want to hear me. You know, white folks, there's plenty of white folks out there that do want to listen. There's plenty of white folks out there that really do want to be allies. There's plenty of white folks out there that do deserve my time. Why on earth would I spend my time trying to talk to a white person who doesn't want to hear what I have to say? And believe me, we know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
We can tell. We have been around the block a few times.
Yeah.
You know, when a person says something to me and I say, well, you know, that's a little bit racist, what you just said there. Like when someone says, I'm colorblind. Someone said that to me the other day. I said, you know, that's a little bit racist. Because I know you're not colorblind.
Yeah, it's not true, first of all.
Yeah. There is such a thing as colorblindness. It's a physical condition. People have it.
Yeah.
You don't have it. The other thing I know is you don't mean that. You are hyper aware, just as everyone else is in our society, who's white and who's not. This whole country was built on the premise of white supremacy. That Constitution everyone likes to hold up and say, this is our founding document. Yeah, well, it didn't apply to people of color.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't apply to Native Americans. It didn't even apply to women. Women were things. We were property. Black people. We were never intended to vote in this democracy.
That's right.
We were never intended to be educated mm-hmm. by this system. We were never intended to have freedoms under this institution.
Mm-hmm.
Those were reserved for the white male.
Yeah.
And now we pretend that, oh, we had this genius idea. Our founding fathers had this genius idea, which is the best model for how humans should conduct life on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply not true.
Yeah.
It's simply not true. So I think part of the problem in talking about these issues when we are so divided as white folks and people of color in this country, it comes down to denial. In many ways, it's denial. I know part of it, you're right, is a lack of contact. It's a lack of contact with people of color. But you got to choose that because we live in a segregated society.
That's right.
There isn't a bunch of black and brown faces in white spaces.
Mm-mm.
We live in a segregated country. So you got, if you're white, you have to go out of your way to spend time with people of color. How many people do that?
Not many. There's all sorts of events people will go to where they can actually feel like they're having contact with people of color, and they're very, very structured, they're very public. But they really don't develop a relationship. They're just contact.
Yeah. I mean, Pangea, those kinds of events, they're great. They're a great way of showing that as a community, we want to celebrate diversity. But you cannot just wear a sticker that says, I celebrate diversity, and then that be equal to you actually celebrating it.
No.
Those two things are not the same thing. You can't just call yourself something and then have that thing be what you are. It takes a little bit more than that. And in this community and every other community in America, I think that if we really celebrated diversity, then we would have diversity in all of the areas and all the institutions. You know, we talk about making sure that we spend time around people of color, yet the majority of our communities are, the majority of police are all men,
mm-hmm.
and they're all white.
Yeah.
And the majority of people in public government, in city government, they're usually men or white women. We don't have people of color serving, but we got Pangea, you know. We have that one event, this one cultural event a year, and we talk about how we don't see color and we celebrate diversity. Is it any wonder? You know, you're going to see reflected what you really believe.
Yeah.
It's going to be reflected all over the place. And I don't buy that cop out that, well, we invited them or they don't come or they don't want to be here. Ask yourself why.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to erase hundreds of years of mistreatment and oppression of people of color by inviting them to a picnic, by asking them to come to an event. You have to create relationships, and those things take time.
Yeah. They take a lot of effort, too.
Mm-hmm. And they're painful, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're really painful. I have a wake-up call for white folks who want to get into discussion of race, who want to take off the blinders. Imagine that the blinders have been stuck on your head with duct tape, because that's what it's going to feel like ripping them off. I'm not joking.
Oh, yeah.
This is a true statement, because the reality is, and I want to be honest so folks aren't shocked, because white folks, or many of them, are seeing the writing on the wall. You know, they're starting to think that, they're starting to realize that, you know, those horrific pictures of white people all standing at the picture of the lynched black person in the past, that that's them now. As they're sitting there talking about how Michael Brown is a thug, and that, you know, Freddie Gray killed himself, or Sandra Bland shouldn't have been so uppity. They're starting to see themselves as the Bull Connors in history. They're starting to realize that they were that racist, like Nixon using the N-word over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to get a little horrified. They're starting to see that tide has turned, that the writing is on the wall, and they need to start, if not reversing their racism, at least toning down their rhetoric.
Yeah.
So that nobody hears them. Because the one thing that is going to make white folks afraid of their racism is losing their stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that they got through racism, through land theft, through genocide, through killing the Indians, mm-hmm. through enslaving black
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
They got stuff. They got money. They got wealth, right? So if that stuff starts to go away because you're a racist, that's not good, right?
Right.
So white folks who want to have these conversations, they're going to start trying to jump in and say things like, that was terrible what the police are doing. We need to have more police accountability. I think that they're killing too many people of color. And white people are going to jump down their throats too. And they're going to be ill-equipped to deal with the onslaught. The person, the white person, the reformed white person that wants to go and talk about race and change their tune is going to find themselves slapped down hard by the other white folks who do not want to be awoke. They don't want somebody to tell them these things. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it from you either. They're going to call you a traitor or a Mexican lover.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to call you all sorts of names. And the people that you're trying to defend, they're not going to run to your side necessarily. Because you're not maybe going to be very good at defending their point of view anyway.
No.
So you're going to find yourself between a rock in a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be a fun place to be. There's a lot of work for people wanting to discuss race in America.
Yes.
And it starts off with doing some research. White folks do not expect people of color to educate you about what you don't know. All right, I'm ready to listen now, says the white folks. I'm ready to listen. Come and tell me why I should care about you. We're not going to do that. We're not going to educate you. We're not going to bring you the facts about police brutality that you have never bothered to learn. We're not going to come and bring you the facts about the history of slavery and mass incarceration that you have never wanted to see. We live it. So we know it. We know it innately. But you have chosen to ignore it. And now you're going to have to choose to educate yourselves.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to be part of the discussion. That's why I said taking off that blinder is going to be rough. It's going to mean having to look at some very ugly things. Some of those things are going to be so ugly, they're going to make you almost wish you had never even started to take her off the blindfold.
Yeah.
Because it's ugly stuff. It's not stuff you're going to want to look at. The history of America is not a pretty thing.
Mm-mm.
The worst part of it is that we continue to perpetuate it and look the other way. And, you know, a lot of people, when we talk about these current events, the problems in our country, climate denial, and all of the things that are happening as a result of that, the lack of regulation of industries, oil, fracking, coal, all of these different things that are causing environmental disasters on a massive scale. We say to ourselves, well, there's a lot of ignorance. There's a lot of ignorance. If people only knew the truth, if only we could sit people down and show them the science behind climate change.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just show people the statistics on police killings of people of color. If we could just get people to understand the history of welfare for white people instead of welfare for people of color. If people understood, then the way in which laws and policies have been created, such as redlining and the drug war and minimum mandatory sentencing, and how those things have disproportionately targeted and destroyed the lives of people of color, then maybe all of this ignorance would disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, that's not the case. Becoming aware doesn't make bigots and racists stop. No, it doesn't. And in many cases, studies have shown the only thing that it does is to make those confronted more defensive,
mm-hmm.
angry that they've been caught, that they've been confronted, mm-hmm. that they've been shamed,
mm-hmm.
and it makes them more entrenched, more violent.
Yeah.
More petty, more willing to hurt others. That, I'm afraid, is what is actually happening in this country right now.
Very much.
That is what I believe is really going on. As more and more evidence, as it becomes painfully obvious how ubiquitous the murder of people of color is by the government, by police, by authorities, and how everyone from the mayor all the way through the prosecutors and the guards in the community and the citizens themselves that vote those people into power and make those policies happen that kill us, that destroy our lives, how all of this white institutional system of slavery is something that white people are all complicit in. As that becomes more and more painfully obvious, I believe white folks are gonna have to choose. Do they look at themselves, their entire community, everyone that they know, all the different things that people work at that they once thought were respectable and honorable things, being teachers, being police officers, being lawyers, being judges, right?
Right.
And say, we got to throw all this out because it's part of a racist system. We got to start different. We got to start from scratch and get rid of these institutions, because as long as the lives of people of color in this country don't matter, we are devaluing the life, the value of life of humans itself.
Right.
And those things do cause problems for white people. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then just take note of the fact that there has been a mass shooting every single day in this country. Every single day, there's been a mass shooting in this country. It doesn't happen anywhere else in the world.
True.
We have a majority of white males, pretty young, lots of them, committing mass murders on a daily basis in this country. That's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real thing. If that's not part of a problem that is caused by a systematic abuse of power and supremacy and oppression of people of color, man, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
I think that it's a very obvious symptom of a problem that Americans have chosen to ignore in this country for a very long time. And that is, when you don't value life of people of color, you are devaluing life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are all people.
Yes.
And when you devalue the life of other people, that is going to affect you down the line. When you make sure that policy is in place so that police can abuse their powers, white people can end up dead too.
Mm-hmm.
And you all are ending up dead.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of your own policies. Y'all didn't think that it was going to come around and bite you in the butt. But it eventually does. And all of that death that is being visited upon our country is a direct result of our lack of value for life. Same holds true for our lack of value for women. As we continue to see more and more of that, we also see the repercussions of that in the way that we're treating the Mother Earth herself. The way that we are abusing and using the Mother Earth as if she were a prostitute, a slave. We can bend to our whim, poison, torture, abuse, steal from, rape. Is it any surprise that one out of every two black and brown women will be raped or sexually assaulted before they turn 18? Just look at the way we treat the earth itself.
Mm-hmm.
How we behave is reflected in everything we do. Our values are reflected in our own country, in our own people, and it's all around us. That's what I think is happening in this country right now.
Wow.
That's the serious discussion I think we need to be having about why we're seeing all of these people ending up in jails. Because I don't think that it is as a result of an increase in those stories. I think that that's been going on for a long time. What I think is actually happening is police are getting wise. It may not be something they can control. I mean, they're going to want to snap just as they always have and shoot a black person or shoot a Mexican down in the street like a dog, because it's their prerogative to do so. And they always have been able to. Plus, it does help to terrorize the mass populace when you take a black kid that's unarmed, shoot him like an animal in the street, and then leave his body there for people to see. That's meant to terrorize us. That's supposed to terrorize you. It's supposed to show you not only that, but the fact that the media can talk about us like we're subhumans, show pictures of us that criminalize our bodies after we're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that everyone can join in the joyful chorus of criminalizing the dead body. And then you get to watch no one punished. The black and brown psyche must reel. It must reel as you see the parade of people being tortured, murdered, all sanctioned by the police and the media and white folks alike. And everyone just washes their hands of the situation and says, next. It's okay in this country to do that. Well, yeah, it is. And we know it. And it is a parade of terror. But it has become a parade of terror that is setting off riots. It is setting off marches and protests and uprising in this country that hasn't been seen since the civil rights movement.
That's right. That's right.
This is a new phenomenon. And it is going to result for the government in very similar tactics. They have already shown that they are not beyond violent police repression with rubber bullets, with mace, with tear gas, with sound cannons. I'm not surprised that there's been the amount of violence that we have seen taking place against these peaceful protesters. I expect more violence to occur. I expect more martial law. I expect more deaths at the state, at the hands of the state. Because that is what historically has been done to repress people who are rising up. And so in order to avoid these kinds of massive risings, I think that they're moving the murders inside. They're moving the lynchings inside. Because there isn't a bunch of cameras in there to record everything. And you know what? Regardless of how much we speculate on how they killed Sandra and when they killed Sandra, we can never know.
Because she's dead.
And because they took her inside to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dash cam in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the dash cam and all the body cams, all that, they can turn them off. Obviously, they can refuse to release that footage to the public. They can make sure that we never get to see it. They can keep it.
They can destroy it and no one will know.
They can destroy it. They can have it held back in court.
Mm-hmm.
That majority of the cases of police abuse are settled so that on the condition that the police department doesn't have to take any responsibility for their actions,
mm-hmm.
and that none of the evidence is ever released to the public. So we never get to see 99.9% of that stuff anyway. But at least some of it exists. And inside the prison, they control everything. It's their turf. At least on the outside, we have some way of trying to record the police. There's an off chance that a surveillance camera, that a person with the phone will capture what occurred to you. And there will be some record of how you were murdered. But we will never know what happened to Sandra Bland. We're never going to know what happened to that Native American man in Denver. We're never going to know what happened to all of these people that are turning up dead in their jail cells, or that Grand Forks woman recently. Now there's a civil rights lawsuit against Grand Forks. Yes, I said Grand Forks, North Dakota. This is not just happening in San Francisco. It's not just happening in New York City. These human rights abuses by police are happening in every town, in everywhere America, including North Dakota, including Minnesota. And we all have to stay woke. That's all I got for you.
Great. Well, you've been listening to KPPP Internet Radio, soon to be KPPP LP FM 88.1 on terrestrial radio. Thank you for listening.